Welcome to Book Club Appetizer. We're your hosts, Abby
and Alana. We're two book addicts from readitforward.com. When we're not making Broad City-related jokes about our names, we call ourselves the Bookie Monsters, since we devour books on the regular.
That's the truth. Book Club Appetizer is the snackable podcast to kick off your book club meetings or to enhance your solo reading adventures. Our mission? To spice up your basic book club by giving you ample food for thought as you gather your snacks and fill up your wine glass at the start of your gathering.
In fact, if you need a delicious bite or cocktail to serve at book club, go to readitforward.com/podcast and check out the recipes we've selected to accompany this read. A chipotle cranberry goat cheese log and a big batch of winter citrus punch.
Two incredibly easy things to whip up right before your guests come over. So thanks to our friends at Tastebook for hooking us up with those.
Every episode, we'll discuss the book we've been savoring this month and bring the author into the studio to do a quick reading and answer our most pressing questions. We hope it feels like we're bringing the author straight into your living room. Warning, this podcast contains plot spoilers.
This month, we're totally in the holiday spirit after reading Marie-Helene Bertino's debut novel, 2 a.m. at the Cat's Pajamas. The entire book is set in Philadelphia, and the plot unfolds over the course of 24 hours on the day before Christmas Eve. Like a child's anticipation while waiting for Christmas morning, every character in 2 a.m. is desperately hoping for something, and their paths cross while they're seeking it.
While this is a holiday read, it isn't just purely sweet. 2 a.m. has a lot of grit and emotion and tackles serious subjects.
The reason I love this book so much is because of that multi-layered quality. It has a vast depth to it.
The book centers on three main characters, but lots of supporting characters orbit around them. One of the things that really drew me into Marie's novel was her writing style. She is so descriptive, especially in this passage I loved, where she describes boys. It's on page 171 if you'd like to follow along. Boys. Tender with their cars, feet that smell like churned earth, sparse bureau tops, loose change, and a dry cleaning ticket, dirty jeans, sun-faded socks, upsetting smirks, forearms dusted with freckles, limbs long with no effort. They pretend to not care how they look. Her father's shelf in the medicine cabinet was empty except for a roll of bandages and a comb that smelled like firewood. Boys. In packs at the edges of fields, hitting each other over some new level of a video game. Obscure band, skate trick, lit crit, rebound, offsides, descending line, whammy bar, pickup, layup, walkman, 8-track, on the bench, down the line, over the shirt, under the bra, fumbling toward the clit. Boys.
Wow.
These staccato sentences coming one after another build this rhythmic quality. And the words she uses make you stop and think, you know, I've never thought about it that way, but she's dead on.
I totally know what you mean. And to me, I really felt like Marie's writing crescendos in the scene where the Cubanistas are playing at the bar and Alex begins to solo. It's like as if with her writing, she's another jazz musician riffing along with the band. Like, so follow with me on page 178, where she writes, "The song surges into a different tempo. Alex pauses on the edge like a Northeast girl waiting to jump into double dutch, searching for the right height or some incalculable readying of sound. Max calls out that this is his party and he loves to sing. The ropes go over and under and over and under. Alex chases after a few notes, but they don't please him. He hunts for a run he likes more. Gus's percussion supports him as he noodles. Alex listens for chords in the strings, his eyes at a fixed point over the crowd. He finds it. He lands again. The people at the front table stop talking." This whole section just feels so anticipatory and eager, just like that metaphor of the girl jumping headlong into the double dutch jump rope. To me, it really felt like this was Marie's version of a jazz scat.
Yeah, and jazz certainly plays a huge role in this book. As the day unfolds, each of these characters become intertwined with one another as they seek something. You know, whether it's love or fame, hope, salvation. And they do it to the soundtrack of some of the greatest jazz musicians.
Yes. And for me, the idea of jazz just totally encapsulates this book. I mean, jazz is a lot like life. It's unpredictable. And if the melody goes somewhere, you have to follow it. Hmm. And I think a lot of 2AM's characters were dealt crappy hands in their lives, but they're playing the cards they've been dealt with dexterity. So now's your chance to grab another glass of winter citrus punch, because you know you want to. And when we come back, we'll have Marie Helene with us in the studio. I wanted to welcome Marie Helene Bertino into the studio with us.
Thank you. Thanks
we
for having me.
We are so glad to have you here. We were just talking about how much we adore 2AM at the Cat's Pajamas, and this is your debut novel, right?
That's right. Yes, it is.
So we are both Philly girls.
That's right.
That's what we have in common. And I love that you set your novel in Philly. Like, it's a city with a chip on its shoulder, by definition. Philadelphia giveth and it taketh away.
Yes, it does.
Just as easily. So I really felt that Philadelphia was a huge character in this book. Do you think the action in this novel could have been set in any other city?
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, I've heard people compare Philadelphia to parts of Boston and also Baltimore. So perhaps it could work. Does Baltimore have cobblestone streets? I feel like you have to have a few cobblestone areas for this book to work. Otherwise, Serena and Ben wouldn't have as romantic of a journey, I feel. Because I very much see them as walking through like dark cobblestone streets in the alleys of Old City, Philadelphia. So as long as a city could guarantee them that, maybe I would think about moving it. However, the book is very much infused by my memories of my time spent, you know, in pre-dawn hours, having my own adventures, kind of acquired this rose-tinted nostalgia. And that is very much the place from which I wrote the city, the particular Philadelphia that is in this book.
My interpretation, the house band, the Cubanistas,
yes.
They sort of act like a Greek chorus throughout the novel.
Ooh,
they
like
state
that.
The obvious. They give some background information to the reader. They are the comedic foil. Did you set out to do that, or did they emerge in this role as you were writing?
I wish I could say that I did set out to do that. I love that description so much. Now that I'm thinking about it, they do kind of act as the Greek chorus, especially since there's a revelation toward the end that they've been having a particular influence on the life of the young musician Alex that comes as a complete surprise to his father, Lorca. And when I think about that, they really do deliver some key information here and there, even though they are so bumbling and they're phonies and not one of them is Cuban.
What was your aim in setting this novel 2 days before Christmas? Do the holidays sort of tend to cast pallor or a glow over people? And do you think the holiday itself was motivation for any of your characters?
Yes, I would say all of the above. Many times I'm asked to speak about my particular relationship to Philadelphia. And as I would hope you'd agree, Philadelphia has a kind of lonely, magic melancholy. And I find that the holidays do as well. For instance, my favorite holiday music is holiday music that contains a lot of sadness in it, like the song Blue Christmas, where it's basically like, you're going to have a wonderful Christmas and I am going to basically be alone and crying. And that makes me happy in a way, because I think it's appropriate. It contains that nice magic melancholy. And so I think setting it on the day before something, infuse the right amount of expectation, and also this is like a non-day. This is a day that is normally of preparation. This is a day that no one expects anything much of. Philadelphia is also a city that no one expects anything much of. These characters are human beings who no one expects anything much of. And so the synergy comes from the top down. Everything just fell into place when I realized I want to set it on like the day equivalent of like a Wednesday, mm-hmm. where people are not really thinking that they'll have anything special happen to them, and then bam.
Actually, one thing that surprised me about 2 a.m. at the Cat's Pajamas was that bit of magical realism at the end.
Oh, sure.
And that took me by a delighted surprise,
good.
I want to say. Did you drop little breadcrumbs of hints for your reader along the way that something magical might happen?
I hope so. I definitely tried to. There is a moment, one of the only flashbacks in the book, when we see a moment of Madeline's mother alive. By the time we meet Madeline, her mother has passed, but we have this flashback where she is alive and we hear Madeline sing for the very first time. When Madeline sings, unexpected things happen, and that is the emotional heart of the book, the effect that her voice has and the effect that one's voice has if you listen hard enough. And things levitate, I'll say, in her house when she sings. And it's funny because people come up to me and say, you know, school wouldn't really be in session on Christmas Eve Eve. And I say to them, there are literally people levitating in the book. And your problem is with school being in session on Christmas Eve Eve. And I have to say, it thrills me to no end. I think, oh, I definitely did something right. If the nitpicking details that they have are, you know, school being in session, I think that the magic was done correctly.
Definitely. And I've heard there's been some feedback about the ending.
Ooh.
Have people been cross with you a little about leaving them hanging?
Yes, I think that's a very diplomatic way of saying that. Yes, I had someone come up to me at a reading who said, what was the deal with that ending? And I kind of stared at her in a very shocked way for a few seconds, trying to figure out what I was going to say. And she said, I mean, really? Come on. As if I had written this book and I was thinking, you know, how am I really going to mess with this one particular lady?
Would you go ahead and read us a passage from 2 a.m. at the Cat's Pajamas?
I'd be happy to. I think that I'll just read the first couple pages. It is dark, dark, 7 a.m. on Christmas Eve, Eve. Snow flurries fall in the city. Actors walking home from a cast party on Broad Street try to catch them on their tongues. The ingenue lands a flake on her hot cheek and erupts into a fit of laughter. In Fishtown, a nightmare trembles through the nose and paws of a dog snoozing under construction flats. The Rittenhouse Square fountain switches to life with a pronouncement of water while Curtis Hall musicians, late for final rehearsal, arpeggiate through the park. The flurries somersault, reconsider, double back. The 9th Street alleys bear witness as they softly change their minds. Mrs. Rose Santiago, shawl knotted beneath her chin, uses a broom to convince them away from her stoop, but they refuse to land. She sweeps uselessly at the air. In her room at the prow of her father's apartment, Madeline Altamari practices the shimmy. Shoulders, shoulders, shoulders in front of the mirror so she can judge herself. Face sharp with focus. It is the world's most serious shimmy. After 30 seconds, a flamingo-shaped timer trills and hops on its plastic legs. Madeline stops shimmying and rejoins a menthol 100, dozing in an ashtray on her vanity. She exhales. Again. On the record player, Blossom Deary says, she's alive, she's awake, she's aware. Shoulders, shoulders, shoulders. After 30 seconds, the timer trills again. Madeline frowns at herself in the mirror, terrible. On a list by the ashtray, she marks 1 minute next to the shimmy, followed by a pert C-. She drags on the cigarette. The other categories, singing, scales, guitar, are unmarked. Madeline is 2 days away from being 10. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, readers. We have some questions on our site, in addition to a link to the amazing Spotify playlist that Marie put together to go with the book.
And if you liked this book and want to read more like it, we'll post a few recommendations on readitforward.com/podcast. We'll be producing monthly podcasts for fantastic books we think you should read along with your book club.
And don't forget to follow us on Twitter @ReadItForward and tweet about books with us. Happy reading and cheers!